This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Inside the Jets line, but quickly, Bogosian for Estrom, and Cody Estrom will slam it in. Unable to stop it there with Smith. Score! Sharp angle chance off the boards, and the Winnipeg Jets on a goal by Blake Wheeler have taken the lead, 2-1.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets as we are T-minus 1 week until the official start of training camp. The Young Stars Tournament, the prospects in action last night in Penticton, BC. Not a good performance on the scoreboard. 8-2 defeat at the hands of a very talented Vancouver Canucks Young Stars team. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the program. I'm alongside my colleagues, Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can also send us your text messages to 1299. These standard messaging rates do apply. Say good morning, first and foremost, to Ezzy. Good morning to Dave. Nice to see you both on this Saturday morning. And an early Happy New Year to you both.
Nice of Dave M. to join us.
Yeah, well, he was lost in a provincial park last Saturday.
Actually, it was a national park.
Pardon me, you were lost in a national park. We're glad to see that you were not eaten by a bear, yeah. So that you're able here to join us on this Saturday morning.
That was a great summer. I cannot complain, but I am ready to talk some hockey.
You look very well rested. Like a guy who didn't wake up last week for the show.
Well, no, I was up early. I was listening to the show.
Uh-huh.
On our drive to Riding Mountain National
Park.
So
you could listen to the show, but you couldn't participate in the show.
Correct.
It's a good effort, at least. At least you listened. That's the good thing. You'd probably have to have a conversation off air if you heard that we were on and then chose to turn us off and go somewhere else.
If you think I could give up an opportunity to listen to Ezzy sampling a burger, you guys are crazy.
It's really radio magic. It's just theater of the mind, isn't it?
It's times like that that I kind of wish we had a video camera in here. There used to be that little
yeah,
camera
when they
here.
Streamed the show live.
That's
online,
right.
Briefly. Yeah,
because it was at Ustream or whatever it was, because that would have been hilarious to watch Ezzy taking that thing down.
While I was eating that burger, I could actually hear myself getting fatter.
Yeah, I can confirm that. I can confirm that without any questions whatsoever. But nice to see that you've made it here through the door for another week on this Saturday morning. We start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets. The dog days of summer are now past us. And they started with a bang earlier this week. You know, it seemed like it was going to be a normal day. I think it was that Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken?
It was.
Wednesday, I guess. No, Tuesday is when
Tuesday.
The announcement. Yeah, sorry, Tuesday. Seemed like it was going to be Wednesday somewhere. Yeah, it was Wednesday somewhere, yeah. No, I don't think it was. If it was Tuesday morning at 8 here, is it Wednesday anywhere else?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I'm not sure how the international dateline works, but I don't think that's how. Anyways, it was a Tuesday morning. Seemed like it was going to be a normal Tuesday morning. Everyone gearing up for the start of the hockey season. And the Jets started with a bang with a contract extension for the Jets captain. A 5-year contract extension for Blake Wheeler. $41.25 million is the total value of the contract. Salary cap hit of $8.25 million. It's sort of funny because last Saturday, Ezzy, the last question I asked Mike McIntyre when he was on air with us was, how do you think this Blake Wheeler situation is going to play out? Entering the final year of his contract, potential unrestricted free agent, and there was no inkling that this deal was coming down the pipe, and then lo and behold, 48 hours, 72 hours later, the Jets make the announcement, 5 years, $41.25 million. Your thoughts on the Blake Wheeler contract extension?
It's a very smart contract for the Jets, Cheveldayoff, Blake Wheeler, and obviously, Blake Wheeler now becomes much better paid and making, $8.25 million a year. What was he making on his last contract?
$5.6 million.
There you go. So, that's quite a bit of a raise there. And obviously the contract doesn't kick in until after this coming season when he's 33 years old. And it comes with risk, guys. But for me, you lock Blake Wheeler up after his career year, his 91-point year. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about it at all during the season. You know that Patrick Laine most likely is not going to be signed here from now until the start of the season. I mean, it might happen, but I think it's more likely that Patrick Laine is signed at some point later in the season or in the summer.
Sure.
Well, I mean, it could always happen, but I think Patrick Laine is going
to
be...
There's no need to get it to do a contract with Patrick Laine, you know, right now.
Right. I mean, we know it's going to be a long-term contract. It's going to be 7-8 years, somewhere in the ballpark of $10 million a year. He deserves it. He's already one of the best goal scorers in the league. So it's a very smart contract for me. And, you know, I realize there has been some criticism. Ty Dello of The Athletic wrote an article, and I think Ty Dello brings up a lot of good points. I mean, if you haven't read the article, maybe we'll send out a link from the IC Twitter account. But, you know, he talks about how players start to really decline when they're 32 or 33 years old. And he also talks a lot about how, you know, Blake Wheeler's 91-point season, his career season, has a lot to do with how he performed on the power play. The Jets had one of the best power plays in the league. I forget what it was. It was a top five power play in the league. And, you know, Patrick Laine was scoring a lot of those goals on the power play. And he even mentions, you know, the 5-on-3 goals skew the numbers a little bit. And his argument is, you can't expect Blake Wheeler to score 90 points for the next 3 or 4 years. And I don't think anybody in the Jets organization expects 90 points. They would like 90 points, but I think they'll take whether it's 80, 85 points. I think the key here, guys, Blake Wheeler's a top five right wing, top 10 at the very least right wing, arguably could have been a Hart Trophy finalist this year, coming off of a career year, but you know what you're going to get year after year, game in, game out. Is there going to be a decline? Sure. I don't know if that's going to happen at 33. It might happen at 36 in the second last year of the deal. But even in those last 2 years of the deal, I think Blake Wheeler's probably going to be a 70 to 80 point guy. I don't see a big, big drop off. There probably will be a drop off, but I don't think maybe it's as big as some people think it's going to be.
Dave, should the Jets have waited a little bit into the season until the season starts to see if Wheeler was going to be able to replicate what he put up last season in a contract year? Or do you think that getting it done before training camp, getting it done so it's no longer, there's no chatter about it whatsoever, it was the smarter move for a team that has significant salary Stanley Cup aspirations this year and probably for the next few years in the future?
No, I think it's a better move to get it done. I don't think you want your captain having to answer that question consistently, not just in our market, but of course when you go to other markets, and that is going to be a question. Is it a distraction, you know, that you're getting constantly asked about that as opposed to the games that you're playing and what's happening with the Winnipeg Jets? And he probably didn't want that to become a little bit of a sideshow. And when you're the captain of the team, there's a little bit more focus on you than if you're just one of the grunts in the trenches. But I think from the Jets' perspective, you know, at least from what my impression of the Jets' perspective is that they're in, you know, go for it mode right now. And the truth is that, sure, there may be a decline in years 3, 4, or 5, whatever that is. But the reality is that they know that for next year and the year after and possibly the year after that, you're probably getting prime Blake Wheeler. And you're getting a guy who's going to give you an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. And I think with the organization's depth and the players that they have right now on this team, with the goaltending they have, the defense they have, they know that they're very, their Stanley Cup aspirations are real. They, you know, had a very good chance of winning the Stanley Cup last season. They know that that window isn't going to be open for the next 10 years. It may, of course, but, you know, in theory, that you've got a really good chance right now with some aging veterans and some really good young players. So I think from the Jets' perspective, you lock up your captain. Your captain's feeling good. I think the rest of the team is going to be feeling good about him getting that contract. And I think from the team's perspective, you know, like you said, like I've been saying, they're in go for it mode.
And, you know, Dave, to go back to that Ty Dello article, you know, he's talking about players that were, you know, 29, 30, 31 years old and signed long-term contracts. And he, you know, mentions guys like, you know, Yuri Hudler. Obviously, you know, he has, you know, Joe Thornton in there, Jeff Carter, Tangay, Phil Kessel. I mean, the list goes on and on. You can check it out. But this is the face of the franchise. I mean, this is the best player on the team. I'm not talking about best goal scorer. I'm talking about best overall player.
The heart and soul of the
team.
You
have to lock Blake Wheeler up. So if he's going to decline in years 4 and 5, I think you know that. We talked about it. He's not going to be probably, I mean, we shouldn't say, you know, with certainty he's not going to be putting up 90 points when he's 36, 37 years old, but he could easily put up 90 points at 33 and 34 years old. So you know there's going to be decline. You know that there is some risk inherent in the contract, but the risk is all worth it if the Jets end up winning a Stanley Cup or two.
Well, you know, we talk about on the show when we talk about contracts and contract negotiation, we talk about leverage. And we talk about how the ownership often has leverage over players. They have leverage when it comes to a guy who's got, you know, who's a restricted free agent with no arbitration rights. This is a situation where, you know, and yeah, you probably ideally don't want to sign Blake Wheeler to 5 years and more than $8 million per season, because there is going to be some decline. But this is a situation where a player had leverage over the organization, and probably could have even had more leverage that he chose not to exercise, because if he hits unrestricted free agency, you know, and puts up similar numbers to what he did this year, maybe he gets even more than a 5-year deal or higher than an $8.25 million salary cap hit. This is a player with leverage using that leverage. And you know, Ty Dello's column makes a lot of sense, but it sort of doesn't take into consideration the leverage. If you're the Winnipeg Jets and you're selling your franchise, you know, and you're selling the entire procedure that you've created for this franchise, you can't afford to have Blake Wheeler hit unrestricted free agency when he's been the third highest scoring right winger in the NHL over the past 3 seasons. And so you negotiate with him, and you negotiate with him in good faith, and that good faith negotiation results in a 5-year contract because the player had the leverage in this situation.
Well, I think that if you're the Jets, you're thinking to yourself, do you want a John Tavares situation where you have a player who's in his last year of his UFA, maybe decides, you know what, I don't want this to be a distraction, tells the team, I'm not going to sign a new deal. And then the Jets have to make a decision. So from the Jets' perspective, again, you're right, Drew. I think they know that what Wheeler had the opportunity to hit, which was obviously unrestricted free agency, and they wanted to take that up and you know, like I said, take account for that in the new contract.
Yeah, I mean it's a good question. I mean it's a discussion point, and I don't see enough analysis about the leverage argument, and I think that's maybe a little bit lacking. Yeah, as he made the point that it's perhaps that it will decline over the next couple of years, or the last 2 years of that contract won't look as good as they should at the beginning. But I also go back to the fact that Blake Wheeler's a guy throughout his career who's been a late bloomer.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you.
You know, he's been a guy who hasn't really... He's not a typical player in this day and age in the NHL whose peak has been at 21, 22, 23, where they're tearing up the league as soon as they step in. He's always been a guy who's taken a few extra years to get going, so you wonder, now that he's, you know, had the career year last year, and I'm not saying he's going to match 91 points, but maybe he is a late bloomer and he can stay at a pretty good clip for longer than guys his age typically would.
Yeah, and there are some people that are saying they would have been a lot happier with a 3-year contract, right, instead of a 5-year contract, because there's less risk. But I don't buy that, because if you're signing Blake Wheeler to a 3-year contract, then you're now going to have to sign him to a 1 or 2 year contract after that 3-year contract expires, similar to Joe Thornton in San Jose. And the Jets know what they're getting in Blake Wheeler. They have no concern with injuries or anything like that, in the fourth or fifth year.
Well, he plays 82 games a year, basically year in, year out.
Exactly.
He's unbelievably durable. You're absolutely right about that. Quickly, Dave Poulin, TSN hockey analyst, was talking about the contract earlier this week. Here's what Dave Poulin had to say.
I think there's two different things, Rick. I think there's age and there's mileage. And I don't think Blake Wheeler's mileage is as high as some players his age. And first off, he looks after himself very well. And some guys decide later in their career they're going to look after themselves, and that's not the case. You know, he's always looked after himself. But he didn't break into the NHL until he was 22 years old. And that 4 years, for me, is a big difference. And the other factor I looked at is the last 6 years he's been number one or number two on the Winnipeg Jets in scoring, and the curve is still arcing up. And it's very possible that he hasn't had his best year yet. So I don't think you're paying for past performance. You're paying for what the player is doing now and what he's going to do moving forward. And you've also got a time frame with this team that probably had a false start 3 years ago in the playoff series with Anaheim, and then management, to their credit, reevaluated and said, we're going to take another look at this, and made some moves and got younger again and injected youth into the lineup and took a step back, didn't make the playoffs for 2 years. And when you came back last year, it was full force. And now I think moving forward, this team is poised to be a Stanley Cup contender for the next 4 to 5 years. And Blake Wheeler fits very well in that time frame.
TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin with his thoughts on the Blake Wheeler contract extension. When we come back, more on the extension, discussion about what this contract does to the Jets' salary cap going forward in the future. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, the cap makes it a zero-sum game. You know, it becomes math, you know, at that point in time. And, you know, obviously some decisions will be made down the line. But for today and certainly for, you know, this season here, we're focused on the here and the now.
Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff from earlier this week on TSN 1050 in Toronto, joining the Leafs lunch crew, talking about the Wheeler extension, talking about the Jets' salary cap issues. It's a zero-sum game. Nobody ever said anything about there having to be math while I was doing radio. Those two things don't work for me. But in any event, here we are, and the salary cap and the math surrounding it is certainly an issue for the Winnipeg Jets going forward. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth tooting, visit Linden Market Dental Center. com. So the Jets salary cap issue is certainly one that's a hot topic. Not so much for this year. This year they're pretty safe salary cap wise. The only person they have left to sign is, of course, Josh Morrissey. They have $10 million in cap space that'll give them plenty of room this year, give them plenty of room to add at the trade deadline or during the season if that's something that they need to do. Going forward now, into next season, you have 11 guys under contract, including, of course, Blake Wheeler now at the $8.25 million cap hit. You have significant RFAs on the books for next year. Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor, Jacob Trouba. Those are the big names. The Jets currently have $27 million in cap space for next season. They have those three players to sign. Are the Jets in salary cap trouble as a result of this Blake Wheeler contract, or you know, not as a result of, but because, you know, factoring the Blake Wheeler contract in, and how do the Jets get out of salary cap trouble if you deem that they are in that difficulty?
You know, just looking at the Jets salary cap for next season, projecting it, mm-hmm. we know that this year it's going to be $79.5 million, right, Drew?
Yeah.
And you got to assume next year it's going to go up incrementally.
Well, let's say,
but it's not going to go up by $5 million, so it's probably going to be somewhere around what, 81, 82.
The NHLPA, I mean, let's say hockey related revenue is flat and we don't know, right. But the NHLPA has the escalator where they can choose to elevate the salary cap by up to 5%.
Right.
They usually do somewhere between 3 and 5% because of the escrow that often is applied to their salaries and to their contracts. But let's suggest that the salary cap for next year is going to go up by, you know, $4 million, like you said. So let's use round numbers. Let's say we're at $83 million for next season.
Right. And, you know that some salary is going to become available. We talked about it last week. Tyler Myers is in the last year of his contract. And if the Jets do retain him, and I do think there is a good chance that the Jets keep Tyler Myers, most likely he's not going to be making that much amount of money. And you guys might disagree with me, but, you know, the $5.5 million that he's making, you know, it's probably going to be somewhere around, what, $3 to $4 million. So you do retain him, I don't know if he is going to be retained, but like I said,
This is a team that's paying Dmitry Kulikov $4.3 million right now, so I'd be hard-pressed to, if I'm Tyler Myers, I'd be hard-pressed to accept less than that dollar figure.
Right, but the point is, he's probably not going to be making $5.5 million.
You're going to get a little bit of savings there, no doubt.
Right, I don't think you can pay him the same as you're probably going to pay Josh Morrissey
if he
signs a long-term contract, right? So the point is, you do have some players coming off the books. You mentioned Jacob Trouba. There are a lot of unknowns, right? We just talked about it. Are you going to retain Tyler Myers? How much is he going to make? Are you going to keep Jacob Trouba? I think there are a lot of people that assume that Jacob Trouba is going to be out the door after this season. And
Elliot Friedman said it on radio earlier. I think it was either yesterday or 2 days ago that his expectation was that Trouba's last year in Winnipeg.
Well, that's $11 million right there, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're paying Blake Wheeler $8.25 million. And let's assume that Patrick Laine is going to make $10 million a year. And let's assume that, you know, Kyle Connor is going to be somewhere around, I don't know, $4 million, $5 million a year. It depends if he signs a bridge term deal. We're going to be having the same conversation that we've been having about Josh Morrissey probably next year, right, with Kyle Connor, unless he, you know, signs a long-term deal before that becomes a conversation, Drew. But I don't think the Jets are going to be in trouble next year. There's probably going to be problems, I think, when you get into, you know, 2020, 21, 2021, 22. And that depends a lot on who do they sign to replace Jacob Trouba. But if you're assuming an $83, $84 million cap here, I mean, you know that you have players like Scheifele, Ehlers, Little, Perreault locked up. I mean, there's always the chance that one of these players gets moved out. Obviously, it's not going to be Scheifele, Ehlers, but it could be Little or Perreault, one of the veterans. I mean, that makes the most logical sense. So I think they're going to be able to fit all of these contracts in, but there always is the chance, depending on how much you spend on that defenseman to replace Jacob Trouba, that it might be very tight. Look, at the Jets had to trade Joel Armia and Steve Mason just to get Connor Hellebuyck and Blake Wheeler signed. I mean, you look at this this salary cap right now, there's no room for Paul Stastny.
Yeah.
They have enough room to sign Josh Morrissey. They don't have enough room to sign Paul Stastny.
They had room to sign Stastny for 1 year. Which obviously wasn't going to happen because Stastny wasn't going to accept a 1 year contract.
That would have put him at a razor thin margin, though.
But yeah,
they have $10 million in cap space, right, Drew? So yeah. Let's say Morrissey gets $4.5 million.
I mean, exactly what Dave just said. They would have maybe had breathing room by the skin of their teeth, but it wasn't a realistic way to go into a season. Or especially with the Jets have been on the record saying they don't want cap bonuses, not bonus payments, to have to apply to the next year's cap.
Well, they're much more cognizant of the fact that because they are so close, yeah, that the bonuses can impact them.
That's right. They want the bonuses to be applied for this year's cap as opposed to have to push them forward onto next year's cap.
Drew, let's assume that Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers, their $11 million is used to sign two defensemen for a similar amount of money. Okay?
Okay.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah, whoever you're trading Trouba for is going to be a comparable player.
Right, and then Myers is probably going to make a little bit more money, but then you use that extra money on whoever replaces Jacob Trouba. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
But whatever it is, it's close to $11 million, whether that's $10 million, whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Point is, and then you add Patrick Laine at $9 or $10 million, and then you throw in Wheeler's getting $8 million a year, Connor's getting $4 or $5 million a year. Even next year, I mean, the Jets are going to be right around, give or take, $80 million in cap,
Right. They're going to be a cap team. I mean, they're going to have to spend to the salary cap, which is a good problem to have when you want to keep these talented, uber-talented players together. It's not like they're keeping a bunch of middling guys together. They're keeping a guy in Patrick Laine who could be a 50-goal scorer. I mean, they're keeping very talented players together.
And I think what's good for the Jazz is that they've got a guy like Jack Roslovic whose contract, he got the entry-level slide on his contract, so he actually has two more years at his entry-level deal, which mm-hmm. is, of course, good for the Jets. And they've got Vesalainen, of course, who most likely will, I mean, we still don't know. That's a big question mark. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press wrote about that. Is he going to play in Europe? Is he going to play in the AHL with the Moose? Or will he make the NHL team? Mm-hmm. So there's questions about him. But the reality
is,
he's on an entry level deal. So you've got some assurance about his money right there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, I think that it's going to require the Jets' brain trust to be very aware of what they're doing, because you can't hand out big contracts to some players, because you have to be aware. Like, if you do these things. And I get why you would want to do them, because you're in go-for-it mode.
Yeah.
But then that requires some pain later on.
Some hard decisions have to be made afterwards.
And we see it. We see it with Chicago, teams like that, where they generally have a little bit, that window to win with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, then you start to have, you have to start dumping salary. I mean, it's just a reality. So I think with that, like Ezzy's right, I think depending on how things go, you very easily could see a Jets team in 2021 that has to start making those hard decisions.
But that's, again, so you're saying the chickens are going to come home to roost, but they might not necessarily come home to roost next year. It might be 2 years or 3 years down the road from now. It's not necessarily a problem for next season as well.
Well, I mean, and again, it depends. Like, you bring a young defenseman like Sammy Niku. Maybe he's ready to make the jump, and if
he might be ready this year even, but you're right. It's another guy who's coming in on a cheap salary.
Right, and so that's all I'm saying. So you've got players that you could, very talented young players in your prospect pool, who could potentially replace some of these aging veterans who are costing $5 million, where you could benefit by having that money allocated to somebody else.
Dave M., regardless of which players leave and which players stay, long are the days of the Jets being not a team that spends to the upper levels of the salary cap.
No,
they're going to be next year. We talked about it. I mean, let's say the salary cap, just for the sake of this argument, is $84 million. They're going to be very close to that if they keep the core of this team.
Well, never mind the core, even. The core is going to stay. It's the guys, you know, I'm going to say Brian Little and Matthew Perreault, who aren't what I would describe as the core of that team. Can they keep Little and Perreault? Those are the two contracts a lot of people point to as the ones that might be most troublesome to the team. Can they keep Perreault and Little with the team next year and the year after, given the salary cap situation? Or do you think those two guys...
No, I think those are
probably... Brian Little's not going anywhere now.
I would say that those are your two prime candidates for but again, you have to think about what is your objective. But right now, the objective is the Stanley Cup. So the Jets are within the parameters right now. They, of course, are... Every decision they make right now, the Josh Morrissey, the reason why it's taking so long is because, you know, whether they sign him to a short-term or long-term deal is obviously going to impact what they do with Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, and everybody else. So I think that's the reason why this stuff is so time-consuming and takes such a long time, because the reality is it's not like you can just be like, all right, like, you there's no ramifications to what contract you're signing now, because, again, there are intangibles you're not aware of. Bonuses... salary cap, etc.
How nice is it, Dave, for Chevy that he's got Jack Roslovic on his ELC for one more year next year?
Oh, it's huge.
Well, imagine if Jack Roslovic was up. I mean, I don't know if he necessarily gets as much money as Kyle Connor, but that's just another player that you're going to have to, you know, increase his salary to, you know, whether it's $3 million, $4 million a year.
Yeah, well, obviously the decisions that he needs to make in this, you know, this season for next year is Connor and Laine, and then, of course, the Trouba question is the big one. Is he here long-term? Is he playing for somebody else as part of a trade? Who do the Jets get back, and how does that affect their salary cap? These are all the sort of the storylines, salary cap-related, that we'll keep an eye on.
And the other thing we have to factor in is there could be trades. You know, you talk about some of these bigger numbers. The Jets, if they have to, could make a trade next year. I'm not saying that they do, but I'm saying that, you know, I mean, if they need to allocate room in the salary, then they might have to do something like that.
I would bet on there being a trade. I'm not saying that it's going to be a major trade, but I wouldn't expect, you know, there to be no trades. I mean, we saw it with Joel Armia and Steve Mason, and obviously that was a unique situation in that the Jets had, you know, Blake Wheeler's contract to deal with, and Josh Morrissey and Connor Hellebuck and all that. And obviously Steve Mason, you know, he was a buyout candidate.
Yeah.
But... I mean, in this day and age with the salary cap, I mean, you have to manage it almost on a daily basis.
For a lot of teams, you do. The Jets aren't that tight to it, but for a lot of teams, they have to make paper transactions on a daily basis just to maintain the salary cap space. It'll be interesting to see if the Jets turn into one of those teams. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. Much more about your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, bottom of the hour. Welcome back to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg here with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined by our good friend Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, good morning. How was your summer, old friend?
Well, it was fantastic, actually. I was afforded the opportunity to have a few good weeks off in a row there. And just thinking, it just seems like it was only a couple of weeks ago where we were leaving the rink wondering how the heck Winnipeg Jets lost in five games to the Vegas Golden Knights. And I'm not sure Jets fans were pushing pins into their Marc-Andre Fleury dolls. It seems like it was only a couple of weeks ago, but here we are just a week away from training camp.
Well, I think we now know the answer clearly to that question was because of the steroids that Nate Schmidt was taking.
Hey, Jason, more importantly, how did you play at Granite Hills last weekend? Because I did not play very well.
Next slide. It was it's always a pleasure to play that golf course, which is fairly close proximity to where our cabin is, and so it's an absolute treat anytime you can get out there. But as you well know, as if you don't hit fairways on that course, the score is not going to be good.
The real question is, your cottage and Ezzie's cottage aren't too far away. Does Ezzie have full cottage privileges at your place, or do you have a restraining order against them?
We actually joked that we have not connected yet over the course of two years, which is quite astounding, actually. But we endeavor to do that next year.
Well, Jason, don't endeavor too hard. That would be my advice.
And we should be clear, it's not my cottage, it's my wife's cottage. But you know what, Jason, how about this? I'll meet you at Pinawa Channel.
That'd be lovely.
Okay, now that we...
I have only hit four rocks there, so why not try for five?
Well, now that we've covered that, Jason, let's obviously talk about the Winnipeg Jets. Training camp gets underway in about 1 week's time, but the big news was earlier this week, the contract extension for Blake Wheeler, 5 years, $8.25 million per season beginning next year. Your general thoughts on the contract? Is this something the Jets sort of had to take care of? And are you surprised they took care of it so early in the season?
No, that's been sort of the way that they operate. I mean, they did the same type of things with Nick Ehlers and Brian Little, and get the distraction out of the way, get a bit of a splash going before the fellows gather for training camp. And I think that, you know, I'm not saying anything that 100 other people already haven't said, that this is a contract that they really needed to get done, and really term and money kind of probably right where we would have anticipated it. Would some people have liked to see a shorter term? Sure, because Blake is obviously going to be 37, pushing 38 years old. But at the same time, I mean, if he hits the open market, you know that the Rangers or Boston or somebody is going to offer him that kind of term. And I don't think they want to take a chance with really a great opportunity to push for a Stanley Cup over the course of the next couple of years. I didn't think that they were going to want to even, you know, have any opportunity to lose that driver in Blake Wheeler.
Jason, training camp starts next Friday. As you know, Josh Morrissey is still without a contract. Are you leaning towards a bridge contract? Are you leaning towards a long-term deal? Or could we maybe see a 4 or 5 year deal for Morrissey?
Yeah, I think in the latter, I would think a 4 or 5 year deal. I'm not really surprised it hasn't gotten done yet. It's not like there's a tremendous amount of will on both sides. I mean, you know, I, like others, have spoken to Josh a couple of weeks ago, and then you hear what the general manager, Kevin Cheveldayoff, said, and there's a whole lot of positivity there. Josh has been in town for a charity event. He's done some skating at the Iceplex. I mean, it doesn't give the impression that there's any animosity there, that there's a holdout situation happening, but it's going to happen, I believe, before Friday, and you're probably looking at a 4 or 5 year deal. And, you know, are we pushing $25 million, that kind of thing? So, you know, he's such a huge part of this franchise, Ian Trouba on that front line pairing. And once they nail him down, you know, they've got everything done. Kevin Cheveldayoff's got all the job jar finished for the summer, and they can forge ahead to what they hope is another real good regular season and a long playoff run.
You know, Jason, in Patrick Laine's first year, he scored 36 goals. In his second year, he scored 44 goals. He's now dropped 14 pounds, reportedly. What do you think it's going to do for his third season in the NHL?
Well, so 36, I'm terrible at math. 36, 44, what, does he jump by another 8? Does he hit the 50-goal range? If there was anything that was missing in Patrick Laine's game, is, of course, you know, there's a few defensive deficiencies, but as a player he matures and will start to figure some of that stuff out. But I think we would all agree that there was a bit of a laziness is not the right word. I just think that his body couldn't handle some of the rigors of an NHL schedule at times, and we saw that towards the end of the season and into the playoffs where he slowed down. But he didn't have that quickness, I thought, last season, especially through the neutral zone, carrying the puck that we saw in the first rookie season. And maybe that was some extra weight, maybe some of that lack of skating over the course of the offseason last summer, by his own admission, may have hampered him a bit. But he's, you know, we saw him just for fleeting moments the other day in that blue tracksuit, and Mike McIntyre was the first person to say he looks leaner. And lo and behold, you know, 48 hours later, he tells Mike and others that, in fact, yes, he's down weight. So, and he wanted, you know, it was by design. He wants to have a quicker push off the start. He wants to be able to, you know, sort of have some a little more explosive speed through the neutral zone. I mean, he doesn't have to be any lighter to take that big shot when he's sitting at the face-off dot. I mean, he's still got that. He was firing pucks all over the place at the Iceplex the other day. But so much of it comes down to who his center iceman is going to be on that second line. If there's chemistry there, I mean, he's going to get his power play touches, obviously. But we'll see. Have to see what happens with that second line if Ian Ehlers find some chemistry with a Jack Roslovic or Brian Little or, dare I say, a Nick Patan. I mean, there's going to be some opportunities there for somebody to step in and play with two very dynamic, exciting young players.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press, of course. Jason, you just mentioned Patrick Laine's partner in crime, Nikolaj Ehlers, sort of flying under the radar as he enters his fourth season as a member of the Jets. You know, 60 points last year, 29 goals, an improvement of 5 goals over the year earlier. But the playoffs, we remember he got the big goose egg in those 15 playoff games, no goals and 7 assists. How do you see Nikolaj Ehlers' performance this year? He seems like he's established himself as a in and around the 60-point, 65-point total. Does he have another gear that you think he can jump up to?
Well, there were certainly opportunities there for more, weren't there? And yet he does have this disappearing act, and he's done it basically since his rookie season, where he's going great guns, and then 7 or 8 games, he's off the score sheet, and you kind of wonder where he's at, and the only time you notice him is when he's flipping the puck in the wrong direction in his own zone, and the puck ends up in the back of the Jets' net. So again, another guy that has to continue to develop defensively. I think there's just so much offense there, and they're really even including Patrick Laine, there probably isn't another guy in the organization that gets Jets fans out of their seat as quickly as Nikolaj Ehlers with that blazing speed. So you know, he's a guy that I think he's got a higher ceiling than just the 60 points. But there's only so much offense they can spread around. I mean, you're talking about, we haven't even talked about Kyle Connor yet. The guy had 30 pretty easy last year, I thought, playing on a top line. And, you know, Mark Scheifele showed in the playoffs that he can score a whole lot of goals. And then, you know, if you take away the fact that he was unhealthy for a chunk of last season, I mean, again, there's only so much scoring to go around. So this team is not going to have any problem scoring goals, and Nikolaj Ehlers is going to be a big part of that. But, you know, I think about Nick Ehlers down the stretch, and when they talk about, or down the stretch in the next year or two, when this team really does get the salary cap crunch, and I wonder if that's a guy that is maybe the most movable for a bit of a king's ransom coming the other way. So we'll have to wait and see how all that shakes out, because there is going to be another cash crunch next year.
Jay, I'm sure we're going to be talking about this from now until the start of the season on October 4th, but do you expect Jacob Trouba to be a distraction for this team at any point early on or throughout the season?
I don't think so. I mean, the team went through this with him a couple of years ago, and there was a few uncomfortable moments when some of the players, I think it was Matty Perrin, had made a comment during when Trouba was holding out, and I think some of that animosity gets cleaned up pretty quickly when the guys arrive in the dressing room and they come together with a common goal. I mean, if Jacob Trouba is still the same Jacob Trouba from a few years ago, where he doesn't always have that aura like he wants to be a Winnipeg Jet. So not a whole lot has changed. I think everybody will be quite pleased to have him and Josh Morrissey as their top pairing for one more year. The only unfortunate part is that they have to go through this all over again, of course, with Trouba. But for now, I mean, he remains a huge part of what this team is trying to accomplish this year, and it'll be business as usual, I think. I think a lot of people will forgive and forget, at least during the 18-19 campaign.
Jason, what are your expectations of Tucker Pullman this season?
You know, there certainly is an opportunity there. I mean, does he slot in ahead of Sherratt and Morrow? I'm not sure. Reach out defensemen, and they've got a couple of them, obviously. Mike and I talked about this the other day. I mean, there's 8 or 9 defensemen that some would consider a bona fide NHL defenseman. Sammy Niko, we haven't even considered yet. I mean, Nelson Njie was so high in the depth chart a couple of years ago and had that devastating shoulder injury. Missed so much time last year, but I'm sure he has designs on getting back in the mix of being one of the Jets, you know, next call-up type of guys. So Tucker Pullman, to me, is probably in that 7-6-7 slot. I think he really does have to assert himself in training camp and give management pause to maybe this guy is ready to be an everyday NHLer.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get back to your cottage life, and we'll see you at the rink next week.
Yeah, it's been lots of fun, guys. Thanks for this. Take care.
Take care, Jason. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss Patrick Laine. What are fair expectations of him as he enters his third year in the NHL? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Not a lot of candy and not a lot of sugars, and I think that was just that I trained the same way that I've been training for the last four years, and just changed the way I eat.
The new and improved Patrick Laine talking to the media as he was skating at Iceplex, looking svelte, is what I understand.
Patty Laine's been eating some kale.
Well, you ate some kale last week, but it was on your burger, and I'm pretty sure the fried salami and cheese curd overwrought the health benefits of your kale.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, okay. Just want to make sure. You do have a shirt, though, that says kale, like Yale, but instead kale. And again, I've never actually seen you eat kale aside from on a burger.
Haven't worn that shirt in a while, but it's probably because it's too tight.
I was going to say, maybe you need a little more kale in the diet, and you'll be a little bit easier to wear that shirt.
I definitely have to lose 20, 40 pounds. I mean, you know what it's like, Drew, the daddy weight.
What?
I mean, you know, it's a lot of, you know, sitting around on the couch, you know, just, you know, feeding your daughter or son with a bottle, and, you know, it's like the freshman
it's
15.
One for him, one for me. One for him.
You know, father 15, freshman 15, father 15.
You're not, that's not a thing, first of all. And second of all, you're
the freshman 15 is.
The freshman 15 is, but that's usually because that's when people start drinking beer legally for the first time.
Also when their parents are no longer cooking for them.
That too. But
Naomi was no longer cooking for me as much because we had a daughter.
It's very selfish of her.
Have a daughter.
It's very selfish of her to, you know, to prioritize your daughter's health and wellness over your eating habits. Anyways, I'm sure much more on that throughout the course of the year. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't say congratulations tomorrow on his wedding to Julie. Looked like it was a beautiful wedding. The invitation must have got lost in the mail, but that's okay. It looked like a nice wedding nonetheless.
Yeah, congrats, Mauro. Welcome to the club.
Drew, in his defense, it was a small wedding of 500 people.
Yeah,
they just didn't have room for you.
They didn't. It's a harsh blow to the ego, but I'll try and persevere throughout that. Let's talk about Patrick Laine. New commitment to eating healthy, new commitment to being in shape. He was on the ice a lot earlier this offseason based on his comments, as opposed to last year where he said sort of proudly that he barely skated at all before training camp began. Are we going to even see an improved Patrick Laine as he enters year three? You know, 36 goals in year one, 44 in year two. What's next for Patrick Laine?
You know what I think is the most impressive about Patty Laine losing 14 pounds, Dave, is that he was still able to play all of that Fortnite and compete in the, you know, the Barstool Sports, Fortnite competition and all that. So he was able to get his video games in and lose weight. I'm obviously joking here.
Well, I mean, he was able to do both. I mean, but
I think as he's saying is that Fortnite didn't.
Let's go live.
Whoa, that was weird. Yeah. Did James just cut off our show?
James just had enough of
producer
that segment.
James is saying that he's done with us and he's now just going to throw it to the hotline. He's like, he's no
like,
guest.
Yeah, he's like actually just hoping that someone will call in and be a guest as opposed to
listening to us chuckles keep rambling incoherently.
No, to the idea of Patrick Laine being a more effective player next season, I mean, I posed it to Jason and I think there's a very good chance that he is. I think the reality is he's going to get those touches on the power play, but maybe his 5-on-5 play will improve. That is one thing, you know, he admitted after the season was that he did a lot of dry land training during the previous summer. And, you know, perhaps that really it did impact his skating. And it really took him a while to kind of get it going in the 2017-18 season. And so I suspect that, you know, he's dropped the weight. He's been on the ice a lot this summer. So I think, you know, Jets fans who are already ecstatic that they have a kid who hit 44 goals last season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's realistic to think that this kid is going to be somewhere in the 50 to 55 range next year, provided obviously he's healthy and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, what are you talking about when you're talking about Patrick Laine? You're talking about one of the best goal scorers in the NHL. I would say the second best goal scorer in the NHL to Alex Ovechkin.
Is this the year that he overtakes Ovechkin as the best goal scorer? Is this the year that he wins the Rocket Richard trophy?
It's very possible. I mean, we've talked about it over the last couple of years since he was drafted. I mean, he is a generational player. He's right up there with Connor McDavid. He's right up there with Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel. I mean, you forget, guys, he doesn't turn 21 years old until next April. He's already got 80 career NHL goals. The majority of NHLers never score 80 goals throughout their entire careers. He's already got 80 goals, and if you remember back to last season, he had some scoring slumps. I mean, he didn't go 15 games without a goal, but there were some stretches there where he didn't score any goals. And remember, he went on that crazy goal-scoring streak. I forget what it was now, but it was, I think, 13 or 14 games. Maybe we can look that up. But, I mean, he was red hot there for a while, and he could have easily scored 50 goals last year. He was on pace, I think, for 55 at one point. So there's absolutely, Drew, a chance that he reaches 50 goals. And I think when you're talking about Lion A, I think his upside is probably somewhere between 60 and 65.
Well, it's funny.
Just as Dave said, I mean, when you're talking about a guy that has that type of shot, and he has only scratched the surface of his potential, I mean, I think his best years are yet to come. I think you're talking about, you know, 22, 23, 24. I think that's when he's probably going to put up his biggest numbers and assist totals. You know, last year he only had 26 assists. I think you'll start to see that go up a little bit around, you know, 35 to 40 as he gets older. But as far as, you know, losing the weight, I was joking about, you know, Lion A playing Fortnite and all of that. But, you know, when you look at what he came into, when he came into the league, I should say he was 206 pounds and then he gained, you know, 15 pounds or so. So he's back to where he was at 2 years ago when he was 18 and he was drafted by the Jets. So it can only help for him to be a little bit leaner. And we know, guys, that, you know, he's not the most fluid skater, but I think a lot of people talk about, you know, Lion A being a slow skater. You forget that he's almost 6'5". So when a guy's that big, it kind of looks like he's slow, but he's not slow. I mean, I'm never going to mistake Lion A for a slow skater. Is he as fast as Nikolaj Ehlers or Connor McDavid? Of course not. But I think it's overstated as far as Patrick Lion A goes that he's a poor skater and all that. I think that we're going to see a much more improved Patrick Lion A this year. And when you're talking about much more improved, that's coming off a 44-goal season.
Well, it's fortuitous timing. Bernie Nichols is going to join us in hour number three of today's show. And, of course, Bernie is one of only 8 players to score 70 goals in a season. So it'll be interesting to get Bernie Nichols' perspective.
Who are the other 7, quick?
Well, I mean, Gretzky, Brett Hull, Timu, McGillney.
That's 4?
No, that's 5, isn't it? 5 including Bernie there?
Oh, well, yeah, including Bernie. Yeah.
So who are the other 3? Do you know?
One of them's tough.
Did Mario ever do it?
Yes, he did multiple times.
Okay.
His career high was 85.
Okay. So
Phil Esposito's in there.
Phil Esposito's in there.
Did McGillney?
Okay.
No.
I got McGillney. McGillney and Solani.
Yeah, they went
in 76.
Yeah.
Yari Kurri.
Are you saying that with definitive
knowledge? Yeah, Yari Kurri had 71.
Oh, there you go, Ezzy. Did you prepare that? No, the question is, did you know that and prepare that before the show?
Correct.
Okay, that's what I thought. Anyways, it'll be interesting to talk to Bernie in hour number 3 to get his perspective on what he sees Patrick Lion A as in terms of a goal scorer. I mean, you know, when you can score 70 goals in the league, Bernie obviously has some insight into how difficult it is even back in, you know, a different generation than now. But, you know, Dave, I mean, I you know, as he said, you know, 50 goals, 55 goals, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. If the Jets' power play continues to succeed like it did this past season, it's not like the talent around him has dropped off at all, and you're likely going to improve as a player as you get from 19 to 20 and 20 to 21. So I don't think it's out of the... I mean, it's almost unheard of in this day and age where nobody scores, but I don't think it's an impossibility for Lion A to get to that magic 50 marker or even higher than that.
Yeah, no, I said that already. I think the 50 is a given, provided, you know, everything goes with him health-wise. But and I think Ezzy's right. I think, you know, it's not unrealistic to think that if he continues to play the way he has in the past and the team continues to get better next season, that he could hit 60.
And again, it goes back to what I was saying about his age. Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep bringing this up. Maybe it's because I turned 36 this summer.
Yeah.
But he's 20 years old.
Uh-huh.
Most guys are not in the NHL at this point.
No, you weren't.
But honestly, though, I mean, he's 20 years old. He's only going to get better and better. That's why I think his upside is 60.
Well, and, you know, it's sort of funny. You know, it was, remember, if you remember back to Josh Morrissey when he sort of broke in, he had that great run with the Ice Caps to the Calder Cup.
Yep.
When he was really just a rookie. He'd still been playing junior hockey. And then that offseason, he went and he almost became too muscular and he put on too much weight.
Yeah.
And then it cost him and he went back to play junior hockey again. You wonder if Laine maybe did this, a similar thing in the last offseason, in that he puts on all this extra weight and it ends up just sort of slowing him down and being a burden as opposed to being an asset. So instead, he drops the weight this offseason, and just by the natural aging process, you get a little bit stronger as you get a little bit older. You know, you're not a kid anymore. You become more of a man, and maybe that will compensate for the drop in the poundage.
Yeah, and again, I think you combine that with his lack of skating over the summer, and I think that's really what leads to kind of his start for that season.
And Dave, I think when you're looking at the glaring weaknesses in Laine's game, I mean, he does have some weaknesses. If you look at Laine right now, you would say over the course of his two-year career, he is too reliant on the power play for his offense. I mean, that's huge. I mean, he has not produced at 5-on-5. I think, like you would expect him to produce based on his skill set.
It's an area where he can improve, is his 5-on-5 scoring.
Right, and I would say...
And if he does, it's going to be incredible.
Right, and we've watched him the last 2 years, and watching him the last 2 years, I would say, you know, for me, it's separating himself from the puck. That's probably the thing he has to work on the most, creating more space for himself in open ice. Because we know that one-timer is probably the best in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's basically unstoppable. So when you're talking about Laine and, you know, his production at 5-on-5 and the way he's able to create offense for himself, aside from off of that one-timer or aside from stepping over the blue line and ripping a shot, I think that's where he's got to improve the most.
And that's it. To his benefit, Mark Scheifele is one of the best at creating space for himself, so Laine might be able to learn from Scheifele and add to the goal-scoring totals. When we come back, Dave McCarthy is going to join us. Dave is, of course, with NHL.com and SiriusXM NHL Radio. Dave McCarthy up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
I don't put a huge amount of emphasis on it. I've always thought that in studying teams, they were always best when they were patient with naming a captain and not rushing to name somebody than having to make a move later to take it away and all the drama that can come with that.
Toronto Maple Leafs general manager Kyle Dubas speaking earlier in the week with TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Dave McCarthy. You know Dave as the Toronto Maple Leafs correspondent for NHL.com. He's also a SiriusXM NHL radio host. Dave, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be on with you, boys.
Our pleasure as always, Dave. We played the Kyle Dubas clip off the top, you know, saying that, you know, another year without a captain for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Sort of a two-part question. One, are you surprised by the continuing decision that the Leafs will forego a captaincy? And then secondly, just in a more general term, do we in the media or fans maybe overrate the influence about a captain in an NHL dressing room?
Okay, well, I'll answer the first part first. No, I'm not surprised. I think Kyle articulated it well there in his interview with Bob McKenzie. I think the last thing you want to do is name somebody and then realize that it's not the right decision and then have to take the C off the guy's jersey. That is a wildly uncomfortable scenario that nobody wants to have happen. So if they're not ready, they're not going to make a decision. And this is a decision that is one that has really far-reaching ramifications, because we have to get serious here. And this sounds crazy because we're not used to saying what I'm about to say in Toronto or really anywhere about the Maple Leafs, but the Toronto Maple Leafs could win the Stanley Cup this year. That is not a crazy thing to say. That's a logical thing to say. And by that virtue, whoever wears the C is going to be the guy in the picture with Gary Bettman who takes the Stanley Cup. for the first time in over 50 years. It's going to go everywhere. It's going to be on merchandise. It is going to be a watershed moment in franchise history, and they got to make sure the guy in the picture is the right guy. So it's not like taking the C in Carolina or in Arizona. This is a far more wide-reaching decision. They got to be sure by the time they come to a decision. So I think there's a couple of candidates that if they were to choose one, I don't think you would necessarily find yourself in a mistake. But, you know, it's within their rights, Dubas and Shanahan and Mike Babcock, to take their time. So I'm not surprised. Do I think we overrate the importance of a captain? Yes, 100%. I talked to Morgan Riley and Zach Hyman about this, Thursday, I guess. And I said, you know, look, this comes up all the time in the media. How much time do you guys spend talking about this in the locker room? And Zach said, well, we've never discussed this in the locker room. And Morgan said, we don't sit around, you know, talking about who's going to be captain, who's going to be assistant captains. He said, we know who the leaders are in this room. He said, we have all kinds of leadership and experience from which to draw on. Patrick Marleau, you know, there was a situation last year in Ottawa where he stepped up, I think it was in the second intermission, gave a speech and turned the team around at a time they were kind of scuffling a little bit. Ron Haynes, he's a guy that a lot of people listen to within that locker room. Now you got John Tavares, a potential C candidate in the locker room. He's been a captain. Marleau's been a captain. So the guys know who the leaders are, and they don't need to look to the sweater to see who's wearing the C in order to know who to listen to.
Dave, after the Toronto Maple Leafs acquired John Tavares, there were a lot of pundits that were now saying that the Toronto Maple Leafs are finally Stanley Cup contenders, not just, you know, playoff contenders, but Stanley Cup contenders. And then on the other side of the coin, you had a lot of pundits saying, well, that defense still isn't good enough. Do you think that the Leafs defense doesn't get enough credit for how good it is, or do you still see a lot of room for improvement there?
Well, certainly there's room for improvement. I mean, there's room for improvement anywhere, on any team, at any time. If you're sitting around saying there's no room for improvement, before you know it, teams will have out-improved you, so to speak. So that's absolutely not a debate. Absolutely there's room for improvement. But I do think the defense gets underrated to an extent. Yeah, there's some nice pieces on this blue line. Morgan Riley is an excellent piece that any team would want on their team. Jake Gardner had a bad night in Game 7 against the Boston Bruins. Otherwise, he was very good for the most part last year. Travis Dermott is a guy who played half the season last year very well, and is, I think, in a position where he is going to continue to improve. He's nowhere near his ceiling. So there's internal improvement there. Nikita Zaitsev was banged up all season last year. He broke his foot. He was out for 2 months. He just didn't really get into it last year. I don't think he's necessarily hit his ceiling. Ron Hainsey is a guy that is a quality veteran. I think ideally you'd like to see him move down the lineup a little bit, play in the third pairing, play less than 2 minutes every penalty kill. That would help him stay a little fresh later in the year. And then you've got a guy, Igor Ogazanov, who they signed out of Russia, who's in his mid-20s. They're very high on. I don't want to hear anything from anybody about what they think he is, because it's all fake news. No one's seen him play. So I'm serious, right? All these people who come to me on Twitter and say, oh, he's not a top four defenseman. How the hell do you know? You've never seen him play. So all I know is the team is high enough on him where Babcock and Lou Lamoriello, 2 summers ago, not this summer, last summer, went to Russia to recruit him, talk to him, and convince him to sign this summer, and they're very excited to see what he can produce. So I think there's a lot of internal improvement that is still possible on this blue line. Then you sign John Tavares, and you have to keep in mind how much strength down the middle helps your team defensively. The more you have the puck, the less time you spend trying to dig it out of your own end, the more easy it becomes on the defense. So let's wait and see through the first 2 months where this blue line is. The Leafs still have pieces later in the year if they feel they need a personnel upgrade to go out and make that move in advance of the trade deadline. But I see a lot of internal improvements still possible from this Maple Leafs blue line.
Dave McCarthy is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is with NHL.com. He's also a host on SiriusXM NHL Radio.
You know, Dave, William Nylander is the lone Leaf without a contract as the season approaches, quickly approaches. Do you anticipate something gets done before the season begins, and what kind of contract do you see him getting?
It's a good question. I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't had any type of internal insight on where they might be, simply because the team just keeps it really locked down at this point. The Brandon Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, they don't discuss, similar to when Lou Lamoriello was in town, they don't discuss contractually where they are in terms of negotiations with guys. What I can say is that Dubas has said on the record that he expects William Nylander to be signed, along with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, for that matter, at some point. Didn't give us a date, but at some point. He said, I can say whatever I want right now, and no one will believe me until we announce that the contract has been signed. So I would, if I was to guess, I feel like he will sign in advance of training camp. I just, for a guy who's been in the league 2 years, despite the fact that he's had two outstanding seasons, you can't not be in training camp at the start of the year. It sets you back. It puts you behind. And there's too many guys within this organization who are capable of pushing themselves higher into the lineup. Kasperi Kapanen, Andreas Janssen, Connor Brown has proven he can play in a top six role. So you don't want to come in behind people if you're William Nylander, where you got to get up to pace. It's difficult to do. We saw it with Andreas Athanasiou last year in Detroit, where he wasn't in camp immediately. And the first 2-3 months, he really had a tough time getting going. So I don't think it's a prudent idea for Nylander not to be in camp when things get going. What kind of contract do I see? I mean, from Nylander's standpoint, I think it would be best if he would sign a 2-year bridge deal. I really do, because at this point, the 2 years would get the Leafs past Patrick Marleau's contract, who has 2 years at 6.75 a year left on it. That makes more money available 2 years from now if William has a couple of more really good seasons where he can really put the screws to the team again. Now, if he goes on a long-term deal, might have to take a bit of a haircut in the near term. So I think from William's standpoint, that would be the best course of action. Bet on yourself, and there's no reason, if you're William, to believe that you won't continue to improve the way he's played in his first couple of years. And I think from a team standpoint, that would really help them out in the near term.
Dave McCarthy, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, shifting away from the Leafs a bit, but staying in Eastern Canada, which team had a worse or more bizarre offseason, the Ottawa Senators or the Montreal Canadiens?
That is an outstanding question.
Unless you're a Habs or a Senators fan, that is.
Well, yeah, that's a great point, but I mean, I'll put it this way. I don't think either of the two teams is in really great shape, and if you were to ask me what the heck is each team doing, I don't know if I have an answer for you, because in Montreal's case, I think they're deluding themselves into thinking they can contend. You know, we talked about pundits earlier on in the chat. I don't know why people even give the Canadiens a courtesy mention when they talk about teams that could make the playoffs. Like, they don't have a hope, guys. I hate to tell you, they do not have a hope of making the playoffs. What is their path to the playoffs in the Atlantic Division? Are they going to be better than the Maple Leafs? Not likely. The Lightning? Not likely. The Bruins? Not likely. Florida Panthers, who had 96 points last year and still missed the playoffs despite their starting goaltender being out for 2.5-3 months, are they going to be better than the Panthers this year? Not likely. Are they going to be better than the Buffalo Sabres this year, who've made a lot of really nice additions to their team and should take a step forward? I wouldn't bet on it. Are they going to be better than the New Jersey Devils, who made the playoffs as a wild card team last year? I don't think so. So where's the path to the playoffs? It's not happening for me in Montreal. And the longer they let the Max Pacioretty situation play out, to me, absolutely baffles me why you would want to have that type of chaos surrounding your team on day one of camp in two languages it makes no sense to want to have that around your team when you're trying to incorporate some younger players. That, to me, makes no sense. Find the best deal you can make, make it, and move on, because the right course of action is not to sign Pacioretty to an extension. It's to move him on at this point in his career and get back a quality package in return so that 2 years from now, there's another wave of talent coming up. In Ottawa, same situation. I mean, they may get off to a decent start this year because they still have some nice pieces, but I really see this team, Ottawa, like the New York Rangers from a year ago, where they, like, you know, they might get off to a good start, but the logical course of action is going to be to sell off Carlson if he even comes to camp and begins the year with the team, sell off Matt Duchene, and to sell off Mark Stone, and then really start to bring in another wave of talent in 2 or 3 years. And I see them sort of sinking at the deadline when they ultimately decide that that's the right way to go about it. So neither of the two teams have had good off seasons. Neither of the two teams could I tell you what the heck they're doing right now. But if they make prudent moves and don't manage with their hearts, I think they've got the assets to turn them over that in a shorter than longer period of time, like we've seen with the Maple Leafs, like we've seen with the Sabres now, like we're seeing in Vancouver with the Canucks, you can see that next wave of talent start to work its way through the organization.
Dave, I have to go back to the Leafs with you. We talked about the defense earlier, and one of the prospects that intrigues me the most is Timothy Liljegren. The Leafs got him 17th overall in the 2017 NHL draft, and there were a lot of scouts that had him ranked on their list in the top 10, maybe even higher. Is he 1 year away from being a full-time NHL defenseman, or do you think in training camp and preseason, you know, he maybe makes this opening night roster?
I would be really surprised if he makes the opening night roster. It's not to say it can happen. It's just to say that I don't really see a spot right now for Timothy Liljegren. Zaitsev is on the team. Hainsey is on the team. I think, like we said, with the investment they've put into Oguzhanov, he's going to be on the team, and they're going to give him a look first of all. If that's the case, then if he's going to make the team, he's going to be your seventh defenseman. Does that make any sense to have him, you know, sitting more often than not? No, not to me. I had a long talk with Timmy a couple weeks ago at the rookie showcase, and we talked about how difficult he found last year was for him making the transition over to the North American game. And he said this time last year, the beginning of the rookie tournament, he went -4 in the opening game of the rookie tournament. Not that it really matters, and I still can't believe I'm even bringing that statistic up. But I only did because he re-referenced it himself in our talk a couple weeks ago, and he said, holy cow, was that ever an eye-opening moment for me? I realized that I really needed to adapt my game from the European style, where he said, I felt like I had all kinds of time. He said, last year coming over to North America for the first time, guys were on top of me before I knew it. Guys were coming from everywhere. I was turning the puck over all the time. So he said there was really a lot of development and adaptation that he needed to work into his game. And that's what he spent the good portion of the first half of the year in the American Hockey League doing last year. He wasn't playing every day. He was spending a lot of time in the gym, getting bigger, getting stronger. He didn't have a real good summer of training last year coming off the mono situation. That may have dropped him down in the draft rankings a little bit. But in the second half of the year, he started to get more comfortable. By the time the playoffs rolled around, he was playing every day and was a big part of the team that went on to win the Calder Cup. So I think the goal for him this year is to take on a role where he is a top pairing defenseman with the Marlies in the American Hockey League, at least for the first 40 games of the year, and then sort of let the team assess where he is at that point. And then who knows? We talked about making an upgrade personnel-wise in advance of the trade deadline. Maybe it's a situation similar to Travis Dermott a year ago, where 40 games in, Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock sit back and say, hey, look at Timothy Liljegren, the first half of the seasons he's had in the American Hockey League. Maybe he is a guy that we can bring up to the National Hockey League, and it can be an internal upgrade similar to the way Dermott performed a year ago. So that's a possibility. I don't think he makes a team out of camp. Needs to really establish himself as a top player in the American Hockey League. And then if he really outperforms expectations in the first half of the year, then I think we can have this conversation again around end of January to see where he is.
Dave McCarthy with SiriusXM NHL Radio and NHL.com. Dave, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Great to be on with you boys. Keep well.
Take care, Dave. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss the Eric Comrie signing and the Jets' battle to be the backup goaltender to Connor Hellebuyck. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
I think for myself, it just do my best every single day and try to earn a spot in Jets. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help them win the Stanley Cup the best I can. Doesn't matter where I am.
Jets goalie, maybe the Moose goalie. Time will tell. That's Eric Comrie talking after he signed a one-year contract with the Winnipeg Jets. He was a restricted free agent. It was a two-way deal. He gets paid about $650,000 at the NHL level, and I think about $185,000 at the AHL level. Time will tell where he spends the majority of the year. He's in a battle for the backup goalie job for the Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're shortly before the bottom of the hour. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, do us a favor. Visit our good friends at KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Drew, was that too much Leafs talk for you?
Any talk. Not too much. I mean, the Leafs are interesting. So, I mean, I guess, you know, there's a lot of storylines around the Leafs. So.
And when the Jets and the Leafs meet in the Stanley Cup Finals this year, you're going to be happy that Dave McCarthy came on and gave you so much information.
Fair enough. My impression of the Leafs is that their defense still isn't good enough to get through the Eastern Conference. I mean, you look at that, I don't know that they... I mean, you saw, you know, if Freddie Anderson was fantastic for the Leafs last year. If he takes the littlest step back, I'm concerned about the impact that's going to have on the Leafs' ability to keep the puck out of their own net. Now the Leafs have a ton of offense and they're going to score at will. But that's my concern. They'll probably score four goals a game this year. They have a tremendous offense. Much like the Jets, you know, for that matter. I just don't know that the Leafs have the defense necessary to make it all the way through the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad you agree with my assessment. Let's talk about the Jets' backup goaltending position. Eric Comrie signs as an RFA. I mean, he was on with Rick and Huss this week. He said, yeah, it came together very quickly. We just didn't start negotiating until, you know, late this summer. The Jets had other priorities. I knew I was going to be here. Where do you see Eric Comrie playing this year? And what is the best situation for Eric Comrie? Is it to be the backup to Connor Hellebuyck? Or is it to play the majority of the games, you know, for the Manitoba Moose?
My impression would be to be playing hockey. And again, we know that Connor Hellebuyck is going to be playing the majority of the games.
Sure.
And we know that Laurent Brossoit was brought on to really, you know, just be his backup, show up, you know, play once every four or five games, whatever the number works out, one, five, six games. Mm-hmm. And to me, last year was a bit of a hiccup in the sense that Michael Hutchinson had played very well for the Manitoba Moose and probably ended up playing a lot more than the Jets organization would have expected, because he was playing so well. I mean, it was hard. You know, he won goalie of the month in the AHL for back-to-back months in October, November, I believe. So, you know, you have a guy who's playing that well. It's hard to not have him playing, especially if you're considering him as a trade potential. You want him to obviously have some desirability for another organization. So ideally, I think that last year we would have seen more of Eric Comrie. Now, this year, with Mikhail Berdin as the potential backup for Eric Comrie with the Moose, I would see Eric Comrie playing the majority, like 50 games in theory. You know, I mean, just if you know, go on the premise that he doesn't get called up, he's on injury, then I see Eric Comrie playing the majority of the games for the Moose. But again, you know, I mean, his mentality isn't, I want to be the top goalie for the Manitoba Moose. Nobody thinks that when they're a young prospect. Their goal is to make the NHL, and whether that's the NHL is Connor Hellebuck's backup, a role he's familiar with because he played Connor Hellebuck's backup role here with the Manitoba Moose. It's definitely possible. I mean, Eric Comrie is a very good goaltender. Some people have gotten down on him for, you know, over the years when he was, you know, a highly rated goaltending prospect within, obviously, he's the number one goalie prospect in the Jets system. But, you know, in the overall, in the NHL in general, I still think Eric Comrie can do some things in the NHL at the NHL level. So we'll see what kind of summer he's had.
Dave, this season, this coming season, I should say, is going to be much different than last year. Because think about, you know, what Dave just said with Michael Hutchinson, Steve Mason, and Jamie Phillips. Those are three goaltenders that were in the Jets system last year who are no longer in the system. Jamie Phillips is now in the Hurricanes organization, most likely going to play for the Charlotte Checkers.
Sure.
This coming season. So you have three goaltenders that were behind Connor Hellebuck. Now they're all gone. The only guy left is Eric Comrie, right? That was there last year. Mm-hmm. The guy that I don't think is being talked about a lot is Ken Appleby. That was one of the under-the-radar signings that the Manitoba Moose made. He's only got a few games of NHL experience last year with the Devils. This is an unsigned goaltender, but this is a guy that was very good in the AHL. He won a Memorial Cup with the Oshawa Generals. I think that was back in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. So they've got Ken Appleby, Eric Comrie, and Laurent Brossoit. For me, it's those three goaltenders. The backup job behind Connor Hellebuyck comes down to those three goaltenders. I think you'd give Laurent Brossoit the edge because he's played more NHL games, albeit 28. But Eric Comrie's played, I believe, three NHL games or four NHL games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ken Appleby's also at three games. So the way I look at it, Dave, I mean, your goaltenders in the American Hockey League, it's going to be Eric Comrie, Mikael Berdan, or Ken Appleby.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it could be Laurent Brossoit, but I believe he's on a one-way deal, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that is the case. Yes, he is.
So I think, I mean, Eric Comrie has a chance this year to be the backup goaltender to Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, the way I look at it, it's not like in previous years when you had a guy like Steve Mason in the picture. I mean, everyone knew that Steve Mason, as the veteran, was going to be the backup goaltender. So, I mean, I thought about it, and Drew, you mentioned it, you know, a few days ago when we were talking about the show, and you said, you know, I want to bring up Eric Comrie and whether or not he can be the backup, because we talked about it last week. And I kind of said, no, I mean, he's going to be the number one goaltender in the American Hockey League. I think the only certainty about the backup role is that that backup goaltender is probably only going to play 10 to 15 games.
Well, let me ask you this question. I mean, are the Jets...
Connor Hellebuck's going to be somewhere between 60 and 70 games this coming season.
Right, but with the inexperience that the Jets now have in their organization behind Connor Hellebuyck, who himself is still a young goalie, but he's certainly been through the battles now.
And obviously, Drew, by the way, that's you know, assuming he's healthy.
Well, that was going to be my question. One, are the Jets putting themselves at risk being this thin when it comes to NHL experience behind Hellebuyck? And two, if something were to happen to Hellebuyck, are the Jets almost immediately looking for to make a trade to shore up that position?
I don't know, because when you're talking about Laurent Brossoit, he's backed up Cam Talbot for the last 3 years, right?
So yeah.
He's comfortable in that role, and he can step into the starter position. Obviously,
28 games of NHL experience.
Right. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. And when you're talking about Brossoit, I mean, obviously, if Hellebuck's out of the lineup for 2.5 months, if you have a Corey Crawford situation,
that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a significant injury, not an injury where the guy is going to be out for a game or two, but
right.
An injury where it might cost him 2 weeks. I mean, you know, or 3 weeks. The Jets just seem like that is the, you know, the one area that, you know, you're questioning if, you know, what happens if.
Well, because you don't have Steve Mason and you don't have Michael Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you had, you know, all due respect to Laurent Brossoit and Ken Appleby. I mean, I think you'd take Michael Hutchinson and Steve Mason's experience. I'm not saying that Brossoit and Appleby aren't good goaltenders, and Brossoit obviously has the relationship with Connor Hellebuyck. They've trained together.
Mm-hmm.
But Ken Appleby's a guy that I think needs to be on everyone's radar. He's only 23 years old, but, you know, he's been a very solid... He's only played the three NHL games, but, you know, you look at, you know, his potential and all of that, and I think you're talking about a guy that could be in the system. He could be in the picture as the backup goaltender. I think when they signed him, it wasn't necessarily just, you know, to fill a hole for 1 year. So I think right now, I mean, sure, Eric Comrie, I think, has a much better chance than he did last year. I mean, I think that's for sure, but I would still give the edge to Brossoit right now.
Dave, any last words on this one?
No, not really.
Okay, there you go. When we come back, we'll talk about Nate Schmidt. He got dinged for 20 games for a PED violation. Of course, he didn't do it. That's what they all say. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.